temperatures falling in the late afternoon into the 30s. Tonight, cloudy, windy, and very cold. A 70% chance of freezing rain, snow mix. Little accumulation. Tonight's low 16. So once again, today's high 59. Tonight's low 16. And then for tomorrow, Friday, partly sunny and windy. Returning to seasonal temperatures. Tomorrow's high only 22. 16 degrees on Saturday, 18 on Sunday. Right now, still very nice. Enjoy it. Wind from the south-southwest at 18. 56 degrees in Racine, 55 this morning in Kenosha. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. Coming up on 8:11, the morning show with Greg Berg is next.
Support for the morning show comes from Jack Andrea, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, a unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe, Jack Andrea, 2401 60th Street, online and on jackandrea.com. Support for the morning show also comes from the Carthage College Office of Continuing Studies, providing graduate and accelerated certification programs in education to start or advance a career in teaching. Convenient evening and summer courses are designed for the working adult. More information is available at carthage.edu/grad. And we welcome you to the Thursday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. I'm excited to begin today's program with Michael Klickner. And he is certainly a well-known name to anybody involved in theater here in southeastern Wisconsin. And at the moment, Michael Klickner is at the helm for a production that is about to open at the Racine Theater Guild. He is the director of the Guild's production of a Tony Award-winning play by Christopher Durang called Vanya and Sonia and Masha and Spike. This is a delightful play that I had the pleasure of seeing on Broadway with David Hyde Pierce, who headlined the cast, and my wife and I loved it start to finish. So the two of us are very, very excited at the opportunity to see this play again on a local stage. And I'm really excited about this opportunity to speak with Michael Klickner about what it's been like to work with his cast and what people can expect from this play, which runs for the next several weekends at the Theater Guild. Again, the play is Vanya and Sonia and Masha and Spike. And Michael Klickner, we welcome you to the morning show.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
Ahead of us talking about the play, I think it would be interesting for people to learn just a little bit about you, about where you come from, your connections to the area, which are extensive, and a little bit about your road into the world of theater.
That is a good question. I've been involved in theater for a long, long time now. The first play I ever really did was in high school at Case High School. I was in a show that some of the students wrote called Friendship Kit and Caboodle. I played a burglar and actually crawled out of a manhole. But then I didn't do anything, and then I went to Parkside for a while, and I studied theater there. In 1975, somewhere in there, 75, 76 season, there was a show at the High Street Theater, where the Racine Theater Guild was many years ago, called The Summer of the 17th Doll. And I went over and I auditioned for that play, and Norm McKee cast me, and I was the young stud in that play, and it was many, 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 many years ago. And then I just got involved with the Theater Guild. I got that bug that seemed to get theater people, and I couldn't let go. And then I went off to grad school. I studied at Parkside, and then I went off to grad school at Utah State, and with the intent of coming back to the Theater Guild to be their TD. Mm. But things had changed, and they needed a designer TD, which I wasn't comfortable being at that time. And then I came back, but the job was no longer there. So I actually worked at Parkside for a little while. I got a job in Madison at Edgewood College. I taught theater there for a while. Then I went off to do some work with the Children's Theater of Madison, and I worked with for a short, brief little period, I worked with the Fireside in Fort Atkinson. And then I left them to go work with the Madison Rep for a little while, and then I got a call from Ed Flesh saying, we're looking for a stage manager. Would you come back and work at the Fireside? So I did go back to the Fireside, and I worked with them. And then I actually got a call from Norm McPhee. Said, we need a TD. We need somebody to come and build our scenery. So I came back to Racine to build for them. And then after a while, it's really a weird circle, this theater thing. I went back to work and build scenery for Parkside. And during that time, I also started building again scenery for the Fireside in Fort Atkinson. And I've been working with Parkside and Fireside for 24 years. But my roots at the Theater Guild go way deep. Both my parents, I think they actually met at the Theater Guild.
Huh.
My mother and my father both were in plays and directed plays and things. My dad wrote the very first and only original musical with his friend Bob Heisey that the Theater Guild ever did, called Adam Loves Eve.
Hmm.
And they did that at the old Uptown Theater and the Main Street Theater when they were still functioning. So I've been here for a long time, and now I'm really, really excited to be back at the Racine Theater Guild, which is, it's like my home. I feel really good there. So
right. At what point did you start actually directing plays versus doing some of the other technical stuff, which is figured maybe even more prominently for you over the years?
Right, right. I started directing when I was at Parkside. They have a Fresh Ink series, and I did a lot of those, which they do new innovative plays, supposedly, and I did a lot of those. And then Doug Enston has called me up. First he called me up and asked me if I wanted to be a member of the board of the Theater Guild, and I said, I don't know. I don't know what the board does. And he said, well, we do all kinds of stuff, and I really think you'd be a good fit. So I said, yeah, okay, I'll do it. So now I'm on the board of directors at the Theater Guild. And then he said, do you have any interest in directing plays? And I said, oh, yes, I definitely have interest in directing plays. And so Vanya and Sonia and Masha and Spike is actually my fourth production for the Guild. So.
And what are the other things you've directed there?
I did Design for Murder, Kitchen Witches, and The Complete Greek Myths in 99 Minutes or Less.
Very good. I especially remember Kitchen Witches because we had a very good friend who was one of the two principal actors in that play. What do you think about when somebody like Doug Instanis comes to you and says, would you direct Kitchen Witches or would you direct Vanya and Sonia and Masha and Spike? I mean, are you game for anything?
I am. I think Doug really likes to specialize and work into the musicals and stuff, which you know because you're involved with that. And, I'm excited about musicals, but I really kind of like the straight play, as we theater people call it, So it's just really fun. And Vanya and Sonia and Masha and Spike is just, it's unlike any play that the Theater Guild's done in quite a while. It's a comedy, but yet it's not a comedy. I mean, it's got funny moments, but it really deals with families and the way families relate to one another.
Right. Oh, yeah. I think that's one of the reasons we loved it so much when we saw it. And actually, we not only saw it on Broadway, but we also saw it at a big theater in downtown Chicago not too long thereafter. And that combination of lots of laughs, but lots of poignancy. You're right. Given a lot to think about. That's a really terrific mix. However, I think it's a mix that is not all that easy to attain, beginning with the playwright who tries to write a play like that. I think so often the mix can be just ever so slightly off, and one aspect or the other will be sort of jarring to the other or undermine the other, and this is a play that really works beautifully in that respect as far as I'm concerned.
Well, yeah, I would agree with that. I really think that, and I've really tried to underplay and not make it too heavy-handed on the comedy or too heavy-handed on the set. You know, it really is, it's about families and the way families relate. It's two sisters and a brother. The one brother and the one sister, Vanya and Masha, are biological brother and sister, and they've adopted Sonia into their family many, many years ago. And you know, they have three distinct personalities. Sonia is just really kind of a little bit of a Debbie Downer and sees the world as half the glass half full. And Vanya kind of floats along, and he's kind of a little more upbeat. But then you throw into the mix Masha, who is a world-class actress and a very famous movie star, and she is just so self-absorbed, it's all about her. So, in fact, that's where the conflict in the play comes in, is Masha comes back unbeknownst to Vanya and Sonia that she's come back to sell their family home that they've lived in all their lives, and it really just kind of throws a wrench into their whole lifestyle. So,
it is a really interesting chemistry between these three siblings, and one of the things I really like about the play, I wonder if you agree, is that they do indeed have very distinct personalities from one another, and yet we believe that they're three siblings.
Right,
I mean, it's not like they're from three different planets or three different species. And it seems to me that the mix of contrast is just enough to make it really interesting, but not so distinct that we never believe that they're actually siblings from the same family.
Well, you know, I kind of have a little bit of my own family in there. I grew up with two sisters, no brothers. I have a sister who's 5 years older and a sister who's 5 years younger. So I kind of sort of see a little bit of ourselves in all of this play. Hmm. And I really do like the dynamic between the two sisters because there are times when they're just at one another and really to rip one another's hair out. And then there are other times when they seem very loving and sincere towards one another. And as I said, it's a serious, it has lots of serious implications, but it is really very funny. In fact, for me, one of the best mixes of the play is when Sonia and Masha are sitting on the couch absolutely sobbing about how their lives are over and they've never done anything and they can't figure out why they should go on living. And I just absolutely laugh at that scene every single night. It's just hilarious to see these two adult women sobbing over how they've done nothing in their lives, and it's just very, very funny. So,
I think we should spell out a little more of kind of the basics of the plot, and then we can explore some of these specific characters who are so interesting. First, let me reintroduce you. I'm speaking with Michael Klickner. He is the director of the Racine Theatre Guild's production of Vanya and Sonia and Masha and Spike, which opens this weekend. This is a Tony Award-winning film about the peculiar dynamics between these three siblings. So we have Vanya and Sonia, who live together. I mean, it is just the two of them in the family home, living what probably can be described as a fairly sedate life, pretty boring, actually, probably, yeah, to those who would give them even a glance. And then Masha, whom you've already described to some extent, enters the picture rather dramatically. Explain the circumstances under which Masha, in a sense, comes home.
Well, as you said, Vanya and Sonia have lived in this house for over 40 years, and they spend most of their time staring out the window at a pond, waiting for a blue heron to come by, which is a Chekhov reference. But then Masha comes home, and they think that she's there to attend a costume party, which one of the neighbors has thrown. But she, just before they all go to the party, they have a really good time. She drops the bomb on them and tells them she's there to sell her family home, to sell the home out from under them that they've lived in all their lives. They stayed at home to take care of their aging parents, who ultimately died of Alzheimer's-related complications. And she's been off gallivanting about the world, doing movies and plays and things. And she comes back with her... She says she's 41, maybe 42. She's somewhere in there between 40 and 50. We don't know exactly how old she is, but she comes home with her 29-year-old boyfriend, whose name is Spike. His real name is Vlad, but when he was auditioning for a movie, he had spiky hair, so now he goes by Spike. And she comes home and just really tells them pretty brutally and coldly, I'm here to sell the house, and you have to move out. She's been taking care of them and paying all of the bills because Vanya and Sonia have no jobs. What they do is they sit in the house and they look out the window and they look at the pond. And she comes home and she's a little bit of a whirlwind and tries to connect with them. But she's really not as brutal as she seems. She learns to come to the fact that really, you know, home and family is where everything ultimately stems from, that she did go off and have a great career, and she sent them money to take care of them and everything. She didn't have to see her parents die, you know, day after day. But we do see that she really does care about them ultimately in the end, and she loves them, as much as a brother and sisters love one another. Or they should love one another anyway, so.
Right. But just the fact that life has sort of served up such different lives for Vanya and Sonia, who stayed at home, and Masha, who has been here and there and everywhere in this busy life as a professional actress, they just don't really fully understand one another or each other's lives, and there's where that interesting mix is. I think part of what makes Masha an especially interesting character is the fact that although she is this professional actress who's had all this great success, she comes home at a point when she is not riding the crest of the wave. She is no longer at the pinnacle of her career. She is experiencing something very painful that a whole lot of people in that business experience. Explain what I'm talking about.
Well, right, she has been in movies which have made her millions of dollars. She talks about, called the Sexy Killer movies, and she's a young ingenue type and very pretty and very lovely. But now she's getting offers to make movies where they want her to be a grandmother. And to any actress who's been the young ingenue, for somebody to say to them, well, it's now time for you to be the grandmother, is really very hard on her. And she, in fact, she talks about that in the play, how she's not ready to play those roles yet, but they want her to. But her sister, Sonia, picks up on that and even says, you know, I've never dated anyone in my life. I've never been outside this house. And here you are in your dotage, which is a pretty brutal thing to say to your sister. And you've got a 29-year-old boyfriend, and she's had five marriages that have failed, Masha. And Sonia's never, ever even dated. And she comes home, and they all do go off to the party. And Sonia actually meets someone for the first time. And there's a scene in the play when she meets, she's on the phone talking to Joe. And it's really a very touching scene because Joe wants to ask her out. And she's like, I've never been on a date. I don't even know what to do. And she's frightened. She's terrified. And you see that little bit of it. But then you see the joy that she does finally get someone. But it is very touching play. I mean, in many
absolutely.
Ways.
I remember that moment so vividly. And your heart is sort of is in your throat.
Yep.
Because you realize how vulnerable she is and how deeply she could be hurt, and she knows that too.
Yep.
It is this, in a sense, make or break moment, and the easiest thing in the world would be for her to sort of pull back into her shell, in a sense, or remain within the safe confines of that home and to not take a chance and risk being hurt. And that is a very, very special thing indeed.
Well, and you throw into the mix, there are a couple, it's called Vanya and Sonia and Masha and Spike, but there are six people in the play altogether. And you throw into the mix, you get Cassandra, who is a soothsayer, voodoo-type cleaning lady who is really quite a character. I mean, she has visions every now and then, but because her name is Cassandra in Greek mythology, Cassandra sees the future, but she's been cursed that she can tell the future, but no one will believe her.
Right.
No one ever believes what she's saying is true, but it seems that most of her visions do kind of sort of come true, and they're very strange. And then you also have, much to Masha's chagrin, Nina, who is a lovely young girl from next door who is just an innocent, starstruck young thing who comes over and is so enamored with this family because they understand plays and things. And she's an unusual young lady because she doesn't want to listen and look at what's new and current and, you know, and she wants, she reads the classics. She reads Chekhov and Shakespeare and all those sort of things, and it's an unusual mix. And it's funny, she's the one who actually says, can I call you Uncle Vanya, to Vanya, which is another reference to Chekhov. And as I said, there are many, many references to the Chekhov plays, but you don't have to have ever read a single Chekhov play to understand this play. It's just reference. If you have read them or seen them, then it will just heighten the experience for you, but you don't need to see them or know the plays of Chekhov to understand this play. So.
I should think that it was really important for you to get exactly the right cast when you are talking about a play with a relatively modest-sized cast, although it's just as important when you're doing Fiddler on the Roof or Les Mis, to cast well. But there is sort of a different facet to the challenge, it seems to me, when especially you have these four major characters.
Right.
And we have to believe them, and we have to believe the interactions between them. And it is a play, in a sense, of some subtlety, and a lot matters.
Oh, yeah.
So just talk for a moment about the challenges of casting this play and the gifted actors you have to occupy, all six of these roles.
Oh, I have what I think is potentially one of the best casts I've ever worked with. They're really all very dedicated to the play, and they love it as much as I do. You have Bill Voigt, who is Vanya, and you have Amy Hansen, who is Masha, and then you have Tina Poxtelis, who also works the box office for the Racine Theater Guild. whose people will remember. She's done a lot of plays in the area for 6th Street Theater and for Parkside and all over the place. And she's Sonia. And then you have Duane Noel, who is Cassandra. And you have Kayla, she's going to kill me. I forgot her last name, who is Nina. And you have Chewy, who everybody knows is Chewy, who plays Spike. And he's done a lot of plays at Parkside and 6th Street Theater, too. So, and they all fit together really, really well. And in fact, I think that Vanya and Masha kind of sort of look like they're from the same family, even though they're not. And then you throw in Tina, who is the adopted one, and she's a little bit shorter than those two. They're very tall, and it really is a very good mix. And they came prepared to work, and they worked really hard, and they've showed me things, and I would say, well, I like that, or I don't like this. And everybody in the show, with the exception of Kayla, has actually done quite a lot of shows. They're quite extensive resumes as actors, and I think she's done some in high school, but this is her first play outside of high school, and which helps to her for her innocence of the whole sweetness that she brings to it. So, yeah.
I should think also that this is the kind of play in which really good actors sort of come out of the woodwork. That is, this is exactly the kind of play that a talented actor is really hungry to be part of, particularly if they happen to fit one of these roles really well. So I know that, you know, at least a couple of your actors actually are not even from Kenosha or Racine, right, but came from sort of points further afield,
right,
excited at the possibility of being part of this.
Well, when I held auditions, I had so many people who were so talented and so good. It really was a hard decision. The only one that really popped out is when Amy Hansen came in and she read for Masha. I thought, oh, she was born to play this role. She is really good, and the others are really good as well. But as I said, I had 20-25 actors show up just to audition for the play, and it was really a hard decision. I mean, lucky for me as a director that I had many of those choices. Frequently you cast a show and, you know, the right person just doesn't show up, so you have to make do. But this play, these people, when they walked in the door, I knew immediately that these people should be these characters, and they're all very good. So
it occurs to me that we have spent a little more time talking about Sonia and Masha. We've spent less time talking about Vanya and Spike. Let's just take a couple of minutes to talk about each of them. Let's start with Spike so we can end with Vanya, who is really, in many respects, the headliner of the cast, even though he hasn't figured all that directly in anything we've really explored. But first, kind of the young stud named Spike.
Spike.
Explain what his presence in the play really kind of brings to the proceedings.
Well, Spike is, as I said earlier, he is Masha's much, much younger boyfriend, which is kind of a shock to the brother and sister they come to visit. But he is a young and up-and-coming Hollywood actor, and he's kind of hitched his wagon to Masha's star to move him forward and looks to use her to further his own ambitions. And he is a young actor, and his claim to fame is that he auditioned and was almost cast in Entourage 2, the sequel to Entourage, which I'm sure a lot of people have seen. And he really is just, like many actors seem to be, very self-absorbed.
Right.
And he's very much into himself, and he doesn't think. And, in fact, that sets up part of what happens in the final act of the play, the final scene, when Vanya has a rant, because Vanya's presented a play that he's written, and Spike is texting and talking to someone on the phone, and he says, well, you know, I can text and I can drive and I can watch TV and I can listen to music and do everything at once, which so many young people think they can. I mean, my own kids think that they do their homework and they're texting and listening to music and everything, and he's in that genre. So he really is very much into the whole situation for himself, and is just oblivious to everybody else around him. I mean, he sees them, but you know, if it doesn't benefit him in any way, he just kind of blows it off a little bit. And then we have Vanya, and Vanya is an older man who has lived in this house He actually went off and he went to college and he came back to take care of his aging parents who were dying, and he came back to tend to them and be there for them. And then when they died, he really just didn't know what else to do, so he just stayed. He just stayed in the home, and he really is kind of like the rock that holds everybody together. Until the end of the play, he's very calm and easygoing, seems to be, and everything is like, well, we can fix this, we can fix that, and when, you know, what are we going to do about the house? We'll have to figure out something. We'll have to get jobs. We'll have to do this and that. Until, you know, he's presented this play that he thinks is a great play, and it's really kind of a strange play. There are no people in it. Everybody's a molecule. It deals with the change in the weather and the end of the world as we know it, and how everybody is no longer a person or a molecule. And Spike is too busy texting to pay attention to his play, and it really kind of sets him off a little bit. It triggers something into him. And then he has what in the script is about a 4.5-page monologue, which anybody who's ever done any acting or anybody who reads anything knows that that is quite a feat for an actor to have to memorize all those lines. And he does a really good job of it. And he just laments how things and the world around him are just changing too fast for him. And he wishes he grew up in the 50s, and he wishes he could go back to those sweet times when we watched Ozzie and Harriet and I Love Lucy and Dick Van Dyke and all of those sort of plays, which is, you know, I mean, many people who are Vanya's age, which is my age at the moment, I'm 64, and we think about those things, you know, how maybe the world is changing a little faster than it used to. And I see people post on Facebook and stuff all the time, you know, the kids today, they're always on Facebook and they're doing this and that and they're playing all these video games. And I say, yes, and so would have we had we had them, but right. We didn't.
Right.
So we played outside.
Yeah, it's not some moral failing. It's just a different world in which
exactly.
We live.
Exactly.
Yeah. One of the things that is so extraordinary about this kind of towering soliloquy that Vanya delivers, and you're right, it's amazing and a tour de force for a great actor to just pull it off, is that one thing leads to another and to another and to another. I mean, he thinks about the things he used to watch on TV and the fact that everybody watched TV then, and we were all watching in a sense the same things, and we had a, you know, it's kind of a communal experience, and that makes him think of something else in which we used to be all together, which makes him think of something else, and that's how you get 4 pages, and it's so amazing the way it's written, and it feels in a sense completely real, even though none of us have probably ever seen somebody do that in real life.
Right.
And yet there's something incredibly authentic and ultimately very, very powerful about that whole scene.
And it's really funny. What really triggers it, what just trips the whole thing, is he's talking about how we used to lick postage stamps and mail letters through the mail. And we don't do that anymore. We all have cell phones. I mean, I can FaceTime with my son who lives in Canada, Halifax, Nova Scotia, and see him instantly. You know, it used to be when I went off to grad school, I had to wait for a certain time of day just to be able to call home so the rates would go down and everything. You know, but time marches on and things keep going. And that is part of what Vanya's issue is that he needs it to just slow down a little bit, just slow down. It's just, but it doesn't. It just keeps going.
Yeah. Can't something stay the same? I think another thing that's really interesting about Vanya's situation, and this would be true of Sonia as well, is that there are some people in life some people in the world who have endured really terrible things. I mean, they've had, you know, in a sense, really terrible lives. I mean, of one kind or another, but just bearing terrible, brutal burdens that they just absolutely do not deserve. And it seems to me that lots of plays and books get written about, you know, that sort of level of suffering, but that we're talking in this case about people where life has been hard, but in a much different way, at a slightly lesser level, which doesn't make it in a sense any less painful.
Right.
But in their case, it is kind of a burden of regret of what might have been and never quite happened, and they're kind of, in a sense, left hanging, wondering if they, in a sense, conceded too much and have they frittered their lives away? Has it mattered at all? And that's not a towering tragedy, but it's incredibly painful and also incredibly real, and something that I think lots and lots of people can relate to.
Oh, I'm sure that a lot of people relate to it. And it is Vanya and Sonia who really have those regrets. As I said, they took care of the aging parents, and their parents died. And then they didn't know what else to do, so they just stayed where they were at. And they both do say, I've had regret. I've not lived a life, and I haven't done anything, and I should have done all kinds of things. And I know lots of people were thinking, I remember when I was 30 years old and I was kind of still floundering around looking for a job thinking, man, I should be somebody. I should do something. But now that I'm older, it's like I have many friends who are like, I wish I would have made more of a difference in the world. I wish I would have done more. But I think that that happens to people sometimes where they just think that, well, I've just kind of lived, but I haven't lived.
Not capital L.
Exactly.
Lived. And I feel like at this point, it's really important for us to reiterate that for all of these really serious life issues that this play explores, that this play is not as heavy laden as it might seem in what we've just been talking about in the last couple of minutes. On the other hand, I'm not sure I've ever laughed harder at a play than I laughed in watching Vanya and Sonia and Masha and Spike. Yeah.
Well, I would say that definitely, this is a play that anybody, I'd say it's a play for adults, from high school on, will definitely find some humor in this play, especially people who are in the 50 to 60 range, because they will look at things and go, oh, I've done that, or I know that, or that's happened to me, or I know that feeling, and it really is just a good in-depth look at how families relate to one another and how they deal with the good and how they deal with the bad and how they overcome what would to some people be just insurmountable odds that they in the end of the play it's a happy ending and they win.
I want to circle back to Spike for a moment.
Okay.
Because I think another really interesting part of this play, and it's something I think about so much, is this character of Spike, and Masha is, in a sense, the same character at a different part of the arc. But for her, of course, her aspirations largely came true. I mean, she was able to experience all kinds of success and make a lot of money. Her dream came true. She's in the painful point now where that dream is starting to recede, in a sense, and she is already in what amounts to a painful decline professionally. Spike, on the other hand, is one of, we can't even number the thousands of people who migrate to a place like Hollywood with stars in their eyes, not only determined to be a star themselves, but convinced that it's just awaiting them around the corner. And, of course, the vast majority of people who pursue such a dream never see the slightest bit of success, but even the whiff of the possibility of success will sustain them. And of course, this young man, Spike, he is one of those aspiring actors. And as easy as it is to kind of dismiss the foolishness of someone like that, there's also something really poignant about who he is and what he so desperately wants.
Well, you bring up a good point, and when I was teaching at Parkside, I used to tell the students this all the time. The statistics are that 99% of all people who call themselves actors are out of work at any given time.
Mm.
It's that very small percent who are the Meryl Streeps and the Johnny Depps and all of those people. And I've met and known so many young people who really aspire to greatness, and some of them have actually gone on and done some really good things. The majority of them do not, however. I mean, if it were easy to be an actor, everybody would do it. It's not easy to be a good actor and to really make you feel something. And Spike really does have this dream, and apparently he has something, because Masha sees a little bit of spark in him as an actor.
Well, and he's the way the character is described, He's supposed to be extremely good looking, and so he has at least that going
well,
for
him. Well, he's supposed to be, but we'll see how that goes. So I tease my actor about that every night. Yeah, and he, you know, he is, it's funny because he is a little bit of a mirror of what's going on in Hollywood right now, you know, and because he's constantly trying to run around in his underwear or whatever, and Masha says, well, you know, that's just the way it is with young people, and that's, you expect a certain amount of that in Hollywood, and I'm thinking, not so much. I don't think we don't want to expect that sort of thing in Hollywood. We want people to be treated fairly and do everything, but Spike is unique, and he is young, and he's full of energy, but in some regards, he's just a little bit clueless. He just doesn't get it. At the end of the play, when he and Masha break up and he's going off to Never Never Land, he's just saying, well, it was nice to meet all of you, and I had a really good time. And they're all thinking, did you experience the same day and time we just did? It's very funny.
So. Right. So I think what really is part of the unique dynamic of this piece is that half of the big four that are mentioned in the title live and work in Hollywood, but this play isn't set in Hollywood.
Right.
It's set, in a sense, I think, on like the other coast.
Right near Upper Blackaddy, Pennsylvania, which is on the extreme east coast of Pennsylvania.
Okay, so a long way from Hollywood. And so in a sense, it is a story about what it's like when somebody from Hollywood leaves Hollywood and goes back home. And how the people back home view those people,
right,
and their own understandings and misunderstandings about what that life is like and what it means. And that I find to be tremendously intriguing as well.
It is intriguing, and it is interesting. And there is a little, just a short segment in the play, which I find very poignant. And Masha and Sonia are arguing about the parents. And Sonia says, you know, even when they were failing in their health and the Alzheimer's was getting worse and worse, they always asked, where's Masha? What's Masha doing? What's she doing now? What movie is she in? And they couldn't remember my name. And I'm here taking care of them, and they don't know me, but they know the movie star.
Wow.
You know, but Masha also says, even though she is a movie star who has made lots of millions of money in the movie, she says, but am I known as a great stage actress? No, I am not, which is, I've known some of each, some stage actresses and some movie stars, and there is that little bit of a tension, you know? I mean, there's like a hierarchy. There's the Broadway stage, the movies, and then you have television actors, you know, which is changing now because,
right,
you know, all Netflix and all of those HBO movies and things, but that was the higher, you know, if most people think of television actors, they think of soap operas and they think, oh, well, they're not very good.
Sure. Well, and even within the film industry, there are sort of tiers, exactly, in terms of different kinds of films, and
right,
there are different kinds of successes, and certain actors are viewed with
A-list stars.
Right,
and
yeah,
yep,
with almost kind of a reverence,
oh,
and,
yeah,
and others kind of get the job done, and it's interesting for all the ways in which we feel, in a sense, so frustrated with Masha, for all the ways in which she comes off as you know, a bit obnoxious and,
yep,
so on, it doesn't take long for us to realize that beneath the surface of her kind of audacity and braggadocio, that she is someone who is experiencing plenty of pain and plenty of regret herself.
Well, and you know, and we've seen that in people that we think have had it all. I mean, look at Robin Williams.
Mm.
Robin Williams, we thought, had it all and was just this happy-go-lucky guy, and you know, committed suicide. It's really, you know, you have to realize that even though they are very famous personalities and things, they are also people and they live real lives.
Right. And fame and happiness are not at all the same thing.
Exactly.
Absolutely. And of course, in so many ways, fame is something that doesn't give you, in a sense, lasting satisfaction. And fame is something that so easily begins to kind of slip through your fingers.
Right.
So,
especially, unfortunately, in Hollywood, with women, as they age, they become less and less in demand. There aren't a lot of roles for older women these days, but hopefully that'll change a little bit.
Absolutely.
That's one of the reasons I really do like this play, because there are six characters, four of them are women, and two of them are men. And I really kind of like that dynamic. It's really, really nice.
You're right. So often it is almost exactly flipped, and yes. And there are all kinds of really juicy roles that make a lot of difference. I also want us to maybe just spend a minute or two talking about each of those smaller characters that are a little bit off to the side in a sense, and yet the play would be less of a play without them. They really make a difference. They add sort of spice or maybe a little extra bit of dimension and texture to the play. First of all, I can't remember their names. You'll have to remind me.
Well, there's Cassandra, who is the soothsayer voodoo
That's
woman.
Right.
And she really is really like the jester in the play. Everything she does is just above and beyond, and she's a little bit crazy. But she's also she's a unique character because it's their house. It's Vanya and Masha's house and Sonia's house. But she kind of comes in and just makes it her own. She's the cleaning lady. Masha at one point says, "Would you please make some lunch for us?" And she says, "I don't want to." And then so then she ultimately she ends up doing it. But she's just, as I said, she is the extreme comic relief. She does and says things that are just so, but she tells them the truth. She says, "Beware of losing the house. Beware of a character who we don't see, whose name is Hootie Pie, who is Masha's assistant, who ultimately ends up with Spike in the end of the play." But and Cassandra is really, she lets the audience, we the audience, know what is about to happen within the play, because the other ones, well, that's not going to happen, but it does happen. As I said, she's cursed to tell the truth, but nobody can believe her.
Right. And it seems to me, like before when we were saying, this play, as we talk about it, can so easily seem even more serious than, in fact, it comes off when you're sitting in the audience. And one of the biggest reasons why it isn't, in a sense, a heavier play is because of the presence of this character, Cassandra. That it's a brilliant move for her to be part of it, and yet it works in a way that is not, in my opinion at least, sort of jarring or off-putting.
Right. And then, of course, as you said, we have the young girl who is actually lives somewhere else. We don't know where she lives, but she's actually there visiting her aunt and her uncle. And she happens to find out that this famous actress, Masha, is visiting next door. So she kind of sort of invites herself over.
Starstruck.
Yeah, and she is starstruck. I mean, she comes in and we have her do the stereotypical grab a hold of her and shake her hand until finally Masha has to pull her hand away, and a little rapid fire dialogue going on there because she speaks a mile a minute because she's so excited to meet a famous movie star, which so many young people are. And but she really is just, I think she represents what they all once were. Sweet and innocent young people who she's not been jaded by life yet. She hasn't seen the harsh realities of what can happen to you in Hollywood or in Broadway or just sitting at home taking care of parents who are failing in their health, which is really a very difficult thing to do. I mean, nobody wants to see a family member that they love dearly fail and not make it, whether in health or in their personal lives or whatever it is. So she really is just that little bit of sweetness that they all probably had at one point and now have maybe wish they had back. So,
And that is really important, too, to have that presence of sweetness. And that is probably an essential ingredient in kind of making this play and all of these interactions work as well as they do. We are recording this interview on Wednesday morning, and so this interview is airing on Thursday, and so it is tomorrow night as people are hearing this that the play is about to open. So describe where you and your actors are at this point.
We're ready for an audience. We need an audience now. Every play, you rehearse it and you rehearse it and you rehearse it and you rehearse it so that you get down the movements and the feelings and the emotions and the words. But I think we're ready for an audience because as a director, I've seen the play every single night now, and some of the jokes are just not as fresh as they used to be for me, so I'm not laughing where they would expect laughs and things. I still do laugh every night. I do. It's a very funny play. But I think we're just absolutely really ready to put this really unique piece certainly unique to the Theater Guild, on the stage and have people come and enjoy it. It has an unusual name. A lot of people haven't heard of it, but it is really a very, very poignant, very nice, very well-crafted play by Christopher Durang. So.
Well, and a play doesn't earn a Tony Award without good reason.
No,
so,
it doesn't.
Absolutely. Well, I think people can already gather from all the blabbering I've done in this interview that this is a play that I love and a play that I'm tremendously excited to see come to the stage of the Racine Theater Guild. So again, the play is Vanya and Sonia and Masha and Spike by Christopher Durang, an award-winning play that opens this weekend at the Racine Theater Guild. And I does it run
three weekends?
Runs
through to January 28th.
Very good. So if people are interested in tickets, you can call 633-4218. And otherwise, go to the Theater Guild's website, which is racinetheater.org, theater, R-E at the end, and you can find out more information about this. Is this the only thing you are directing this season?
Yes. Yes, I think so. I believe so, yeah.
If you're directing something else, you've evidently given it no thought.
No, I haven't thought. I guess not.
Well, I'm glad that you have been able to come back to the Racine Theater Guild, which has been such an important part of your life and your family's life. And certainly I'm glad that you are at the helm for this terrific play. Michael Klickner, thank you so much for making time for this in what I know is a busy week. And we wish you and the cast of the play only the best over the course of the next 3 weekends.
Thank you very much.
I'm Gregory Berg. And to finish out the hour, here's a little taste of the music of Johannes Brahms, a faculty colleague of mine at Carthage Cottage. Dr. Wael Farouk, an amazing pianist, is chronicling all of the piano music of Brahms over the course of a series of different recitals. And the concert tonight will feature the music from Brahms's Opus 116, 117, and Opus 118 as well. Here is the Capriccioso in G minor, one of Brahms's most wonderful works for solo piano. One of the pieces played tonight on this concert, 7:30 at Siebert Chapel. The beautiful, eloquent piano music of Johannes Brahms. This is an excerpt from his Seven Fantasies, Opus 116. The music of Brahms featured tonight in a recital at Carthage College in the Siebert Chapel, 7:30 p.m., featuring Dr. Wael Farouk, part of his series of recitals devoted to the beautiful piano music of Johannes Brahms. Admission is free. Tomorrow on the morning show, in a rebroadcast of one of our favorite interviews from last year's, you'll hear my conversation.